so glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you being empowered with knowledge so you can save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Our websites, Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com. Coming up in just a few minutes, this is terrible. Today's Clark Rage is about how many people are afraid their credit card's going to be declined because they've used up their whole limit. Seriously. And coming up yet later, as I've shared with you a month ago, the home security industry is going through the greatest wave of change since it started in the 1950s. And I want to tell you, that's a long time ago, right? I want to tell you about all the ways you can do home security far cheaper than you ever would have imagined. So, not that long ago, the Wall Street analysts were sure that Costco was toast, that Costco had no chance against the onslaught of Amazon. And guess what? Costco and its arch rival, Sam's Club. Sam's Club doesn't report true separate numbers because it's owned by Walmart. But they're both doing just fine, and Costco is booming. The sales increases Costco's having are some of the finest in all of retail. How could they do that? I mean, they have limited selection, limited hours. The stores are basically truly warehouses. You walk in, there's concrete floors. They've got the tall ceilings, the merchandise stored in what they call the steel, forklifts running around. Got all that going on. And yet people willingly pay to Costco $60 a year or $120 a year, depending on which membership level. Sam's Club, $45 or $100 to be members. The premium members of both get money back for everything they buy. So how are they continuing to do so well? Well, according to research done by, I just love this name, the Crazy Coupon Lady, that consistently across items, Costco and Sam's Club are 10 to 15% cheaper than Amazon. So there are lots of people that are members both of Amazon Prime and of Costco or Sam's Club. They coexist in their lives. I'm the rare nincompoop who's a member, premium member of Sam's Club, premium member of Costco, and we have Amazon Prime. So I pay for all three. So I'm paying $119 to Amazon, $120 to Costco, and $100 to Sam's Club. That is a lot of membership fee. But in our case, we do almost all our shopping at Costco and Sam's Club. And we're not big Amazon shoppers, and we'd drop Prime if it weren't for actually the Prime Video. So for us, it's one of our principal video services, and the Amazon 1 and 2 day shipping is just kind of a throw-in, but not very important, because if you order a large enough ticket from Amazon, you don't pay shipping anyway. But the real answer to why I'm so intense about Sam's and Costco is I save money. Now, you can conspire against yourself, not as much at Sam's Club, because the merchandise doesn't really get to a level of excitement there. It's really just about saving money. But at Costco, you know, they do a lot of treasure hunt stuff that tempts you to put things in your cart that maybe you really don't need, and you hurt some of the savings you'd have by buying things you really don't need. Well, my solution to that unless I know I'm going in to buy something really heavy, I never get a cart. And that reduces the temptation. It means that the savings really are savings instead of buying things I don't really need just because they're on sale or cheaper. Linda's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Linda, you're thinking of buying a new vehicle. Tell me about it.
Well, the car that we've had for 19 years and has 318,000 miles on it, we're going to give to our son who needs a car. So
wait.
For a new car.
Wait. You kept the car. You said 19 years?
19 years.
You know that's phenomenal.
318,000 miles. It's phenomenal. And that's why we love this brand of car. We've had a lot of cars with this brand, and we love it.
What brand is it that you're brand loyal to?
Volkswagen.
So you say you're brand loyal, but you're really not helping them if you're only buying one vehicle every generation.
Well, that's true. we've had, you know, most of the cars we've had we've gotten 300,000 and 400,000 miles out of. And like I said, we're not even getting rid of it. We are buying another vehicle because we want to give this one to our son. The problem has come up that we want the new full-size SUV that they just came out with in 2018.
Called the Atlas? Is that the one?
The Atlas, yes.
Okay.
And because it's a new vehicle, I think, we've talked to our mechanic, and he's advised us that they kind of have some kinks, which is, you know, what happens when you introduce a new model, I think.
Yeah, and in fact, Consumer Reports agrees heavily with your mechanic that in the first 2 years of manufacturing of a model, that they're going to be more trouble because they haven't figured out exactly if they designed it quite right, or if they've got the manufacturing exactly right. But if it came out, and you said 2018, would you be buying...
2018 was the first.
So you'd be buying a 2020?
Probably a 2019, a new one, a 2019. They haven't changed the model, really, since 2018. So it's really not going to be all that much different because it's... basically the same model.
How much would you save buying a 2019 versus a 2020? Because you're a classic buyer of a new vehicle with a past model year because it fully depreciates out as long as you own one. But if there's not much price difference for you buying a 19 or a 20, you could really get into the third year cycle of that vehicle. And by then... you wouldn't really have as much to worry about with teething pains. I mean, if one's made late in 2019 as 2019, probably not either. I may be worrying too much, but do you know the price difference between getting a 19 and a 20?
You know, I don't, because I don't know that the 20s are even out yet.
Well, usually automakers switch over the model year in, is it September or October? I'm trying to remember which month that they go to the new model year.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, we have not even, looked at the 2020s. We were just looking at the new 2019s. And that's when my husband was kind of wondering if maybe, and we've never researched this or thought about it, but maybe leasing one of those vehicles.
Definitely not in your case.
No. Okay.
Your cycle of ownership, just buy the thing.
Okay.
Because if you do leasing, really leasing is a way that is a trick with financing that is not relevant in your life.
Okay.
Because you're going to keep it so long, that's just not something that you need to worry about. And, you know, the great thing with the Volkswagen is they really have the best warranty out there, as I recall.
I was just about to say they do the offset on that is that they do have an excellent warranty. I think it's 7 years and 84,000 miles.
I thought it was six and like 72, that. But it's something in that territory. And
something in that
it's
territory,
really,
yes.
Really a great warranty. So I would feel confident you're loyal to the brand. You know the vehicle you want, the large SUV. And I would go test drive one just to make sure that it still is what you love. And if it is, I think if you're going to save a couple of $1,000 buying a 19, buy a 19. Otherwise, go ahead and buy the 20 and get that one additional year of hopefully more reliability in that vehicle. And again, this is not specific to Volkswagen, according to Consumer Reports, because of the complexity of the electronics in vehicles now. Getting a couple of years in a new model first before you buy is a good way to get other people to deal with the trial and error of a new model rather than you. Paula's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Paula.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you, Paula.
I just wanted to know, this year I want to purchase a house. I currently live in a condo. I do not like condo living, so that's why I want to switch over and buy a house. However, you need 20% down. I was wondering if I could use my Roth IRA and then pay it back within that time frame that they give you. Would that be okay or
not? Yeah, you can do that. You can do that within 60 days, but you have to do it a crazy way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to move your IRA from one company handling your Roth to another.
Yes. And that's what I was planning on doing because I actually do have to switch it over because I do have a new employer. So I wasn't sure if I was going to move that money anyway into my own or put it on if I could slide it into my new employer's account.
All right. So wait, you said the money was Roth IRA or Roth 401k?
Roth IRA, I believe.
All right, if it's employer money, it would be a Roth 401k. If it's your own account, it's a Roth IRA.
They matched it. Whatever I put in.
Yeah, so that's an employer provided plan.
Okay.
So here's the problem with an employer provided plan.
Okay.
You can ask them for a cash out of it, but they hold 20% back for taxes.
Okay.
And you don't get that 20% back till you file your return the following year.
Oh, okay.
So you're without that money for that entire period of time.
Okay.
So if you had time, you could move it from the old employer into your own IRA.
Okay.
And then can you withdraw at that point? You could withdraw your contributions. I'm trying to think when the employer match money would be pre-tax. If you're contributing to a Roth 401k, your money would be after tax, but what the employer's contributed is pre-tax.
Mm-hmm.
So you could move all the money into your own IRA and your own Roth IRA.
Okay.
The Roth portion, you can pull out at any time for any reason. You could move it to
as long as I pay it back, or do I need to pay it back within that?
You don't have to pay it back, but you can't turn around and put it back in past the $6,000 you're allowed to contribute in a year.
This gets really,
if you make even a single mistake in what you're trying to do, you get clobbered tax-wise. This is one of those cases where if you've ever used an accountant to do your taxes, you want to go over this, bring your statements, go over it with them, tell them what you want to do to try to come up with the 20% down, and make sure you do it exactly right. Because I'm telling you, even a single tiny clerical error and the IRS owns you.
Oh, okay.
But if you can do everything exactly by the rule book and you can get the money redeposited in an account with a new provider within 60 days, you may be able to pull it off, but you added several layers of complexity there with it being employer money and not your own personal Roth IRA.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Today's Clarkrageous moment is about how we're handling credit cards. The amount of credit card debt outstanding has gone up roughly 50% in the last 8 years. That is a stunning increase in total amount of credit card debt. And more than a third of people, according to a WalletHub survey, say they've already maxed out their credit cards. That's a shockingly high number. And another thing, a third of people say they're afraid if they go make a purchase that's a large one, they'll max their credit card out. This is not good for your long-term financial health. Not to mention, the average credit card carries an interest rate of somewhere between 16 and 18%. So I want you to think this through. Buying things with credit when you can pay your bill in full is great. And you're what the credit card companies call a deadbeat when you do that. Some call it freeloader, but usually they call it deadbeat. On the other hand, they're just so excited when you leave an unpaid balance they can charge you massive interest on. Maxing out your credit cards also demolishes your credit score. Think this through before you pull that card out and say, charge it. I'm so glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Our websites, Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com. I did a thing on the show, and also I wrote an article for Clark.com about what I went through going from a professional home burglar alarm to a self-install alarm. And I talked through how I selected an alarm and I put in Ring, which is owned by Amazon, talked about my experience installing it, that it took me longer than any living human being it had ever taken them to install one. It took me 3 hours to install something that should have taken, based on what other people's feedback was, 45 minutes, but I am incompetent. But I have a really inexpensive alarm that I installed. The monitoring works out to be $8 a month when you pay on an annual basis. And I've been really happy with it. But I got a lot of feedback from people that was from unhappy to hostile, that why would I let Amazon into my life with all the privacy issues that have come up with Amazon, and particularly with Amazon's Ring product, where Amazon has admitted how much spying they do off of people's Ring security devices. So that sent me back to the drawing board. And I wanted to tell you about some alternatives that have been getting good reviews in the marketplace that are independents. One that's called Kangaroo Home Security, is very inexpensive. The web address is heykangaroo.com, and they seem to rotate different specials where your monitoring is just like Amazon with Ring charges you $100 a year. By the way, Google with Nest is charging, I think it's $300 a year for monitoring. Simply Safe is up there too. So with Amazon's Ring charging $100, Kangaroo charging $100, this is really good stuff. Now, Kangaroo, the equipment costs for, you know, your door and window things, that's a really technical term. For your door and window contacts, if somebody breaks it, comes in, you know, breaks into the house, triggers the alarm. It's just like the same kind of stuff like with the others. And you got your base station that you have your code you punch in and all that. So they all pretty much follow the same kind of thing. It's just in this case, you are independent of the big guys. You're independent from Amazon and Google that are becoming so powerful with the Nest brand at Google, the Ring brand at Amazon, and people may not want to be in their ecosystems. And I can't understand why anybody would ever put in the Nest security and pay that massive monitoring cost. Same knock I have on Simply Safe is how expensive the monthly monitoring is. Because the actual cost of providing monthly monitoring is probably $1.50 or $2. And getting $8 a month out of somebody is a pretty large markup. To turn around and charge $25 is highway robbery. But anyway, that's Kangaroo. Again, the website's Hey Kangaroo. Another I had never heard of and read a review on TechHive of is Minut, M-I-N-U-T. This one is weirdly different. The website, minut.com. This one, you buy these devices that you can pay $8 a month to monitor, zero if you just don't want monitoring, but you want to have your alarm. I don't get that necessarily. Anyway, it uses a technology that senses body heat. So instead of arming the doors, arming the windows, it knows when there's an intruder based on your body temperature, that it senses it and triggers the alarm. So completely different way of doing it. Again, $8 a month. It's something that is sold around the world. So many of these others are really for the U.S. or U.S. and Canada. This one is really a worldwide kind of thing. But because you don't have to put contacts on doors and windows, it's really, really, really easy and quick to install. And these are just two examples of what's happening in the marketplace for home security. It's going to be very difficult for the traditional professionally installed market. It's one of those marketplaces where technology is becoming a big disruptor. And I've been waiting, as I've talked about this, it's the third time over the last several months, I've talked about self-install home security systems. I keep waiting for a post on Clark Stinks to be shared with you on the show from somebody in the professional industry saying all the things I'm missing by talking about self-install. But the reality is the market is moving self-install because you do a professional system, they may hit you with one of those ugly long-term contracts. Never, ever, ever, not ever sign one. Number two, they'll hit you with a very high monitoring cost per month. And number three, the equipment costs, because of the professional labor involved installing, can end up being quite high. Angie's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Angie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great. We are looking at selling our house, and we're wondering if we should purchase legal protection. So basically, it would cover cost $250, and it covers $20,000 of legal fees. So if the new homeowner finds something wrong with the house after closing and they want to sue us, it would cover that $20,000 of legal fees for up to 2 years. And our realtor said our umbrella policy would not protect us. It also doesn't cover or protect any of our assets. It just covers those fees.
Right. So this is a lot of money to pay. $250 is like legal insurance. So it doesn't cover the real exposure for you is if somebody alleges that you lied on seller disclosure, you sold them a home with some terrible problem, they get a judgment against you where you're required to fix all kinds of things or pay them big money. All it does for the $250 is it covers a ceiling of legal fees. Let me tell you, if you end up in a big mess lawsuit, the legal fees are the least of your worries.
Okay.
So I'm glad you asked about this because seller disclosure statements are things that people tend to gloss over and not really think through and sometimes fudge on the answers. And it's much better to just take your time, methodically go through the seller disclosure, and be as straightforward as you can possibly be. And if you have to go check records and make sure that you've put down the right stuff, do that. So you give the buyer nowhere to go because you did full disclosure. Almost always when somebody gets in trouble after a sale with a buyer coming after you is going to be because something was not disclosed as it should have been on seller disclosure.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. One concern we just had was, what if there was something wrong with our house that we had no idea about? Like, what if we had hidden mold or something?
You're not responsible for that. You know, the buyer is responsible for having the home inspected. And when you do a seller disclosure, you disclose what you know. You can't speculate, oh, you know, I wonder, could there be any mold downstairs that we should be telling somebody? I mean, you're not going to do that. And it would be unrealistic and unreasonable for a buyer to say you should have known. How would you should have known? Now, today, anybody can sue anybody for anything.
Right.
And so I deal with that with my companies that, you know, I get sued from time to time for crazy things. And the legal meter does run. But you can't insure against every possibility in life. And paying $250 to cover possible potential legal fees seems like that's just too unlikely for you to spend $250 that can stay in your pocket.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much. That was so helpful.
Thank you. I'm so glad you asked me the question because you gave me another opportunity to talk about doing seller disclosure statements and doing them right. John joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, John.
Hello, Clark. I hope you're having a wonderful day.
I am, John, and I hope your day is great.
Oh, yes. It's an honor to speak to you. And my question is, I'm 66 years old. I have a 401k. I've got some other retirement programs also. But my 401k, I'm concerned about the stock market and the election coming up. Last year, I got a return of 33.49%, and I'm in seventh heaven over that. But I'm worried about the market, the potential of suddenly dropping after the upcoming election, and wondering if there is a safe haven where I might put my money to weather the ups and downs of the election without withdrawing it, which exposes me to tax liability.
Sure. So, first of all, elections very rarely are the trigger that would cause a market meltdown. You go back to when we had the disputed election that went to the Supreme Court back in 2000.
Yes.
Between Al Gore and George W. Bush. And that was a time of great uncertainty for, what, about 7 weeks?
Oh, yes, at least that long.
And it had no meaningful effect at all on the investment community. You know, elections
right.
are not a pivotal factor. And even if the day after someone's elected, there's a relief rally or a big panic sell-off, it's a temporary flash in the pan either direction, because the underlying strength of the economy and the profits of companies whose stocks you own through your 401k, that's what determines value over time. So don't fear an election result being what would cause the markets to crater. But
Okay. There's
a different thing. If you earned a return of 30-point-something percent, whatever that, what was that number again?
33.49.
If you did that well last year, it means that you are very heavily exposed in your 401k to stocks. And if you're 66 and you're intending to spend this money at some time soon, like at what point are you going to bag work?
Probably another 3 years or so.
Okay. So I would say that if you wanted to go into a safer zone, take everything in your 401k and go into the Target Retirement Fund 2025.
Okay.
The idea of the Target Retirement Funds is they mathematically are designed to reduce risk in down markets by making your portfolio steadily more conservative as you approach retirement and then when you're in retirement.
Okay.
Because if you got almost a 35% return on your money, it means, are you 100% in stock type choices?
No, I've got some index funds in there.
Well, those are stocks too.
Oh, yes.
So you're way too heavily tilted towards stocks.
Okay.
And do you know in your 401k, do you have a choice of the Target Retirement Fund?
Yes, there are.
So I would, instead of selling and going to the sidelines and saying I got to wait out uncertainty with this being a presidential election year, I would instead think, hey, I'm bagging work in 3 years. I need to be in a more conservative trend line with my money. And I would go all in into the Target Retirement Fund 2025.
That makes a lot of sense, and something that hadn't crossed my mind. I appreciate your advice. Thank you.
Absolutely. And again, don't worry, be happy about elections. They don't cause the kind of dislocation or disruption that you may be concerned about from the tone of the political talk shows. It's time for Clark.com/ask. That's where you post a question for me. And then one of the ways we answer it is producer Joel asks your question for you.
Yeah, Clark. Carol had a question. She said, I'm looking for a great interest rate on a short-term CD. I saw that Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers some of the best rates. I'm looking to deposit $50,000. Is this a reputable bank that I can count on? Because the FDIC doesn't list Marcus, only Goldman Sachs on their website. So I'm a bit confused and not sure what to do.
Yeah, so it is A-OK. It is fully FDIC insured. And any Goldman Sachs partners listening would be like horrified that you're worried about their solvency and security, but you were just fine doing one with Marcus.
All right. And Joe says, what's the best free email for security purposes?
The best is ProtonMail, and it's a European-based email service. It is very, very well-respected. But to get true end-on-end encryption, as I recall, I shouldn't even say this I'm not that great at technology, but my understanding is that both the sender and the recipient, to know you're going to be confident with full end-on-end encryption, both need to be using ProtonMail. That's how you close the deal. ProtonMail is a very easy-to-use email service.
All right, Bernice says, Clark, I don't want to overpay for gasoline. How far should I consider traveling in order to get the best price at the pump?
So figure it costs the typical person around 60 cents a mile to operate a vehicle. So just as a simple thing, if you're saving $2 on gasoline, you can go up to 3 miles out of the way, and you're still saving money in a typical scenario. So generally what I like to do is when the tank hits half, that's when I start looking for gasoline on my route instead of waiting till I'm getting below a quarter, and then I may have to go out of my way to find a deal. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.